It's the Skinny Podcast, only on Local12.com. Now, here's Richard Skinner, joined by Chad Brendel of BearcatJournal.com and Rick Roaring from MusketeerReport.com.
And welcome into the podcast for this Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. I'm Richard Skinner, Local12.com digital sports columnist and editor, along with Rick Brewing and Chad Brendel. Boys, how was Thanksgiving?
It's delightful.
You look like the Cheshire Cat right now, Chad.
It was delightful. I'm tired.
Well, still got tryptophan in the system?
No, actually, it ended up becoming a late night because I was getting ready to leave my aunt's house. My uncle says, hey, your back tire looks flat.
Ooh, that's not a good thing.
And we tried to go and put air in it, and it wouldn't take air, and had to change the tire and put the spare on and go get a new tire this morning.
That's why I'm the lazy AAA guy, man. I just get me some AAA and call them up. It's the easiest way for me. I know that's lazy. I know it's not very manly, but it's the way I roll.
I called my dad.
Okay. Well, okay, it's even less manly. How about you, Brewing? How was the Thanksgiving day?
Oh, couldn't be better. Laughed at family, watched some basketball, and ate some food.
Hang on, not laughed with, but laughed at.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah.
How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to how we do this podcast. I come in here, I laugh at you clowns, and then I leave.
I like it. Yeah. Okay. I like that stuff. All right. Before we get into Little Xavier and UC, we're going to look at some national and Kentucky, and maybe the chance for them to run the table against the really soft schedule that they've got ahead of them. I got to start with four letters, Rick. What four letters might that be? Can you help me?
I think that's out of date now. I think we refer to them by two words now, right?
Yeah. Well, it's probably
changed.
True. That's probably true.
They are now the artist formerly known as IPFW.
But I still like to call them that.
Me too.
It is your Final Four pick that went down in flames. But they are, I will say, and I come here to give you crap, obviously, as you know.
And that's fine.
You knew it was coming.
I'm okay with it, yeah.
You knew it was coming. But they're not the first team that's made a run to the Final Four that has lost a god-awful game in November.
And their best player was sick. He only played like 12 minutes and didn't play the entire second half.
Got to have depth.
I don't care as much about that, but I will say I don't think this Fort Wayne team is as bad. Like I don't think
yeah, they're
like
a decent mid major.
Yeah, that name looks bad when you lose to them, and
sure,
especially when you're Indiana.
Especially when you're ranked where you're ranked.
Right, but this Fort Wayne team is like I think they might be a top 100 type team. So it's like I don't think it's even going to
and it was resume in Fort Wayne.
Wise, yeah, I don't think resume wise it's going to even end up looking that bad for Indiana.
Well, and for an Indiana, I mean you've got plenty of other games to repad things, refocus things, and let's face it. By the time the committee makes its decision,
that game's long gone.
Absolutely. I mean, while they talk about looking at your whole resume and looking at all that, that game is so far. As long as you don't all of a sudden keep stumbling, that game looks so far in the rearview mirror. Especially when it wasn't like you got beat by 12.
Down to the wire over time.
Right.
It would be better if they still had the dude with the headgear, the boxing.
Yeah,
headgear.
Dan Peckinpah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was awesome. The guy had so many concussions.
I remember that. I remember seeing that guy. Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah,
guy.
They came and played Xavier, and Ben Botts was still on the team.
Yeah.
And later became a great assistant. Now coach there. Skinny, I want to ask you this.
Yes.
How much credit does Tom Crean deserve for playing this game? Because we keep hearing this. Like, everyone's making such a big deal out of, we've got to give him so much credit for even scheduling.
I mean, it was
an
IU home game if you looked at it.
That's what I'm asking you.
I like when state schools, when the big state school takes care of the smaller ones. I like when Kentucky would take a game with Eastern, then a game with Western, even though that didn't work out so well back in the Tubby Smith era. I'd like to see a game with Murray. I like to see them take care of the in-state schools to give them some semblance of a payday. I don't think that's too much to ask.
Ohio State's really great about that.
Oh, they're fabulous. They do it all the time. As long as you're in the MAC and it's football. Yeah. But, yeah.
Will this discourage other high-major teams?
And there is the problem, because you have nothing to gain. Absolutely. Now it's an embarrassment that you lost. No matter how you lost, it's still an embarrassment that you lost to IPFW. I mean, that's the bottom line to this. But I almost think there should be some level of mandate across state college systems that say, if you're the big guy in the state, take care of the little guy.
You
got to
play at least one a year.
Yeah. And look, I'm not here to tell you Kentucky needs to roll in all of them, or Indiana needs to roll in all of them, or Ohio State needs to roll in all of them. But at least one. And if you lose on your home court to one of those teams, then shame on you.
It wasn't at IU. It was in Fort Wayne.
Yeah, no, but I'm just saying, if you do that, though, shame on you. Kentucky's not going to Murray, and they're not going to wherever, and neither's Ohio State primarily. But, yeah, if you roll in one of those schools into your place, shame on you.
Well, and that's the big difference here compared to most of those other games, because Kentucky does have a bye game against an Eastern or whatever occasionally.
Usually, they're good about that, right.
And a lot of other schools do that, too, but you never see it where they go to another gym and play. So that's why – this one was a little bit different, and it's why – it's funny because you guys mentioned, and I think you hit on the right point, which is it's not going to matter for Indiana. Like, if they take care of business by the end of the year, this will be a loss that you're like, oh, well, that's kind of a blip on the radar, but it doesn't really change their seed line probably. Right. And – but at the same time, you know, every other high major coach that was considering doing something like this is going, oh, there's no chance in hell I would ever do that.
No, that's right. I think it almost has to go above coaches and athletic directors and schools and go to the state university systems that simply say they get together and say, listen, you are going to play one game a year. If you're in the state university system and you are Big Brother, you will play one. We prefer you play two, but you got to play one to help everybody else out just from a financial perspective. I think it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I'm not against that.
So, all right, let's touch first on UC because they did play since we last podcasted, and then we'll touch on a little Xavier and obviously some more on Kentucky and some stuff across the board nationally. I was sitting at home the other night doing some work, and I was following the Twitter feed, and I was following you, and I kept seeing the score pop up and the score pop up and the score pop up, and I thought, what in the world is this run that Samford is on? Was it fluky? Was it just a stretch where you just wonder what in the world's going on? You got to, what, 33-19 at the worst, correct?
33-17 was
33-17,
the worst.
33-17, okay.
We were talking about this on the way over. They played 32 minutes of really good basketball and dominated, and eight that just were absolutely abysmal. I mean, they were walking away from guys shooting wide-open threes. They switched a man. Everybody was, you know, the Twitters were complaining about get out of the zone, get out of the zone, get out of the zone. So Mick gets out of the zone for five possessions, and they score 11 points, four threes and a layup. They couldn't play zone. They couldn't play man. They probably couldn't wipe their ass if they went to the bathroom. It was just 8 minutes of complete what in the hell happened. And then they righted the ship, go on a 9-0 run to end the half and dominated in the second half. So it was a really weird deal to see that 8 minute stretch right in the middle of that game.
Looking back, if when was the last time UC gave up a run like that?
At home, I don't remember.
Tony Yates?
Like, and certainly, like, UC's runs usually are like 8-0 runs because they can't score for
right,
8 minutes,
yeah,
and the other team just did score incrementally.
It's 8 over a 7 minute period.
But they never
held them scoreless for 7 minutes.
Yeah, they never let a team get on a run like that where they just let the other team score and score and score and score. So that was weird to see. And it also is weird because it was like UC was so physically dominant compared to that team. Like, they were clearly so much better than them. It was weird that there was like that 8 minutes of incompetence where they just couldn't do anything right.
Well, it was, you know, and this is a problem both UC and Xavier have had this year. It was when they brought in the first batch of subs.
Right.
And they're just, the continuity was off right from the get-go. Justin Jennifer and Jaron Cumberland both had terrible games.
How much did Mick let him play through it?
Not much. Okay. I mean, I think Jennifer played 8 minutes and Cumberland played seven total when they've both been, you know, 13, 14, 15. You know, hell, Jennifer at a lot of games has been playing 20, 23 minutes a game. Neither of them had a deflection. Their energy levels were low. I don't know if it was, you know, coming off of that tournament.
Looking ahead to the holiday, maybe.
The starters were focused. I mean, for the most part, the starters played really well. But outside of Nizir Brooks, the bench was just abysmal. And he tried combinations and trying to figure out their way through it. And then finally, when they get, there was about 2.5 minutes left in the half. And it was like they just all of a sudden were like, oh.
But it also, the positive to it is you had to react to being down double digits, even if it was at home.
Yeah. With Kyle Washington with three fouls in the first half.
And find a way to rally from that. So maybe there's some good that came out of that.
Maybe. I mean, like Rick said, they were superior in pretty much every way to that team. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you like to see that they bounce back quickly. And that was the thing for me, if I was going to take anything away from it. It wasn't like generally when you see something like that happen, it's a slow grind all the way to get back.
Well, especially for the past few UC teams we've seen where the offense
if they get down 16, it's going to take them the rest of the way to get back. And they were already in the lead 3 minutes into the second half.
To get it to five at the half, all of a sudden you're like, okay, they're fine. I mean, they weathered whatever storm there was. Five is nothing. Five is literally 2 to 3 possessions.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you look up and they're starting to pull.
It's just weird.
I think the line for the game was like 18.5, 19, and still, despite being down, they almost covered the doggone spread.
They were up 17 before Samford continued to press with like 12 seconds left. UC was literally standing there trying to dribble out the clock.
You know what I'd do there? throw it ahead and dunk it. You know what? If you're gonna make me do that, I'm gonna dunk it.
Well, no, they got it across half court. Everybody settled back in, and it looked like Samford was gonna let them dribble out the clock, and then they sent two guys at the ball handler.
If they're gonna do that, if you're gonna wave the white flag to them and say, hey, game's over, we're not gonna rub this in, and you decide you're gonna try to take it from me, I'm gonna say go dunk it. Just that's silly. That stuff bugs me. The little stuff bugs me. Stuff like that bugs me.
I swear Xavier doesn't have that problem because JP McCure is already dunking at that.
Well, right. Chris is yelling, don't. Yeah, no doubt about it. So certainly for UC, it was a little bit of a slip up for a short period of time, and looking ahead of what they've got, they've still got a chance to continue to work on some things just because of where the schedule sits.
Well, I mean, kind of. They've got Lipscomb tomorrow,
right.
And Lipscomb is awful. I mean, dreadful. Slow, unathletic. I mean, that should be... If they should score 100 points. They're a team that doesn't have a lot of athleticism, but they want to run up and down the floor and not play any defense. So that should be one where UC gets 90, 100 points and just beats the crap out of somebody. And if not, and then next week, next game after Lipscomb is at Iowa State, who
struggled a little bit yesterday. Struggled a lot yesterday.
They didn't look great against Indiana State, and it kind of clicked. When we were wondering in the preseason, why does Cincinnati scrimmage Indiana State of all people? Indiana State was on Iowa State, so you get a
feel,
some tape of them against an opponent you know. But that one, that's in Hilton, man, and it's so hard to even think, to fathom going into that place and coming out with a win.
Yeah, that's a good point, but going to play well is another matter, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, the one thing that... You know, that I did take away from that Samford game, Kyle Washington, again, like we talked about, he had 4 points and 3 fouls in the first half. He sat out the first 8 minutes, 7.5 minutes of the second half. And then in the final, 12.5 minutes, he scores 14 points and just dominated, for the rest of the game.
He's been great.
He's been fantastic.
He really has. All right, Rick, for Xavier, this is deja vu. It feels like we were just already talking about this, but we'll talk about it real quickly one more time. Northern Iowa obviously coming to Cintas Center after they just played Northern Iowa on a neutral floor. Anything that you can think of that Xavier would change up looking ahead to that game or just because it's you're so familiar with each other, it's almost like an NBA seven-game series. You play at one place, you come back and play at another, you know each other.
Yeah, that's right. It's kind of an interesting vibe, something you don't usually get to college where you've seen all the actions, you know everything they're kind of going to throw at you. We talked about it on the last podcast. I think Xavier was helped by the fact that they were able to kind of just win with their free-flowing ball screen motion offense.
Without
having to get into a lot of their sets in the second half. So if this game is close, they still have that in their back pocket. But the thing I think more so for Xavier, the big difference is I think Kaiser Gates is going to be ready to play. Brian Snow posted something on our message board last night saying that he's pretty certain everything is good to go there, and that was kind of what I suspected as well. So seeing how they work Kaiser Gates back into the rotation, especially against a team that is good. Like, it's not like you're – I don't think you plan on being up 15 here in the first half and being like, okay, we can substitute however we want.
Right.
I think you're going to be in a tough game that you're battling to win, and finding him minutes might not be easy. I'm interested to see how they'll use Kaiser. From the Northern Iowa perspective, I think they're going to try to do more of what they had success with in the last game, which is instead of trying to penetrate or get ball screen stuff where they weren't able to get into the lane against Xavier, I think they're just going to try to create more motion and ball movement for kick-out threes, which is, a lot of times you're trying to drive and then kick out for the three.
Right.
But what they had more success doing was getting like two or three rotations to where Xavier had to help once, and then once like Malcolm Bernard, who's not fully comfortable in the system, he'd help off a little bit too much, be too late getting back to a shooter, and they'd be able to get an open three. So I expect they're going to be running lots of little wrinkles to try to trip Malcolm Bernard up and some of the younger guys up and get more three-point looks.
Yeah, and really, I mean, there's nothing else really to talk about the game because we saw some of it, but those are certainly some interesting wrinkles for it, and we'll certainly recap that game coming up on Monday. I do want to touch on this, and I'm looking at Kentucky's schedule, and that Michigan State win initially looked pretty good, even though it was early in the year, and certainly Michigan State has really, really started to struggle. And I know I'm putting cart before the horse because somebody asked me this the other day too and said, "Do you think Kentucky can run the table?" And I thought, honestly, I haven't even looked ahead that far. It's almost silly too, but I decided to start to look ahead that far. When you look at it, I guess can they? Maybe they can. The SEC doesn't look a whole lot better. The non-conference schedule. Really, the only chances to get tripped up, they play Arizona State on a neutral floor in Atlantis, and they're not a very good team. UCLA couldn't guard a fence post, but they can score. I watched a little bit of them play Portland last night. They can score. The North Carolina game is on a neutral in Las Vegas, and then they do play, obviously, at Louisville. That's a potential to be tripped up, although somehow Louisville was an underdog to, what, Wichita yesterday or 2 days ago. Did win the game. But when you look, there's not a lot of places for them to get tripped up on a schedule.
I kind of disagree with that. I do too. I don't know how many games you need to be able to get tripped up.
Right,
but if you're
playing
a neutral against North Carolina, you're playing at Louisville.
North Carolina is rolling right now.
They are rolling.
You've got to host Kansas still later in the season.
Yep.
I mean, there are plenty of big time games, and then there's also
Tennessee Martin
game you got to play at South Carolina or something SEC play where no one cares, and you're supposed to
Frank's
win by 23.
Frank's got a pretty good team.
Like, there's just those weird games that always happen. So,
and you're talking about two freshman guards carrying a heavy, heavy load.
That haven't gone on the road
officially
yet.
The biggest concern I would have for this team in terms of, like, will they be able to be dominant enough to focus in and win every single game is what we talked about a week or two ago when we were talking about they're not a great shooting team, obviously. And then with them having such young guards and other young players that they're trying to bring together, they don't have that chemistry and ball movement at times to overcome it when they're not shooting. So I think they're going to hit a wall against someone pretty good and not be able to get out of
it. They do have one thing that is separates them from most other teams when they get into a lull is they can just give the ball to Monk or Fox and say, beat everyone to the rim.
Yeah.
And they do that at the elitist level.
Yeah, but it's look, we're talking about the best team in college basketball probably, so I'm not trying to downgrade.
No, I know what you're saying.
Way.
I know what you're saying. I'm just saying when they get those lulls, Cal can just say, turn it up.
Absolutely, but at some point it's going to be like the John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins team, where yes, you're physically dominant, and yes, John Wall can beat anyone off the dribble. But at some point, West Virginia is going to be good enough and big enough and long enough to play his own.
27,
right?
When
you shoot the ball terribly,
right?
Not just bad, but terribly.
And so that's my question. It's not whether UK is good enough to challenge for a national title or anything like that. It's can they overcome those laws when they hit them at some point?
With what Cal has done from a schedule perspective early versus even what Izzo's done, and Izzo even came out and said, "Hey, maybe I scheduled too hard. Although I'm not going to apologize for it because it's what I do, it's what my teams do, and I'm fine with it." What is the yin and the yang for that? Obviously you got to go team by team and formula by formula, but is Cal doing this the right way with a young group? And although he's always got a young group, is Izzo overdoing it with what was going to be a young group?
Well, Izzo never has a young group. I mean, this is incredibly rare for them.
Yeah.
To be so reliant, and they thought Deontay Davis was going to be back for another year, and that would give them, you know, at least a sophomore that had been through the wars, and he went to the NBA. Izzo just schedules like this because he typically always has the veterans, and they're missing two guys to injury that would have helped them through this. They're just they had a really good freshman class, and it deserved all the hype that it got. But it most certainly was not the class that Kentucky brought in, and it was not the class that Duke brought in. So outside of Miles Bridges, they got a bunch of really good dudes that probably just aren't ready to beat top 10 teams yet.
And I think the difference between this year and what Izzo typically does is you had the insane travel.
Yeah, everywhere.
You started in Hawaii to open the year. 4 days later, you're in New York. 5 days later, you're in the Bahamas. You've played Arizona, UK, FGCU, which is pretty good this year, St. John's.
Game of scare, yeah.
And Baylor. And then you've still got Duke on Tuesday coming up before the month's over. So, I mean, that's just an insane schedule. And I think one of the things, when we have Mario Mercurio, Xavier, the guy who does all Xavier scheduling, he's the director of administration at Xavier, he talked to us the last few times about sort of their philosophy. And he says, when and where we play a game is always much more important to us than who we're playing. Like, we're willing to go play anybody, but we want to make sure we're not setting ourselves up for something like this, where you're traveling all over the place, or you're going to play a big rivalry game and then coming back and playing a really tough game on the road, or you're playing during exam week or something like that, a really tough game. They worry so much more about that, and that's where I think you get in trouble, where Michigan State got in trouble, is they just didn't factor in, hey, we're going to be running all these kids ragged, flying all over the country.
Plus
playing
school.
There's that. Yeah,
nah.
So I think that was kind of
They take tutors on the trips with them, so they're
gotcha.
Fine.
Yeah, they're always fine.
Sister Rose has passed those classes a lot of times.
She has. What, 100 straight?
Yeah.
100 straight seniors?
That's an amazing number, is it not?
It truly
is. Do they give her an honorary diploma for everyone that goes through?
Hashtag Xavier Way.
You had to get that in there, didn't you? You had to get that in there for sure. I want to talk about the two conferences real quick. Go ahead.
Can we talk about Kentucky real quick?
We can.
Because when we talked about signing day a few weeks ago, UK had no recruits. And now they're the number one class in the country.
Didn't take long.
So
well, he was even asked, because I think there were some media members, or at least asking on the part of fans, what 2 weeks ago, how's recruiting go? And he said it's going fine or going well. One of the I wish I could remember what
it's
the exact
going
term.
Bleeping great.
Yeah. So I think that might have made people go whoo a little bit, and now it makes them go whoo a little bit more.
Yeah. So can we get into the recruiting class real quick? Yeah,
absolutely.
I know you love PJ Washington.
Freaking love him. I mean, the kid's he's 6'9". He's got great touch out to the 3-point line. I've seen him, you know, dunk, like literally kill like four or five kids. Just put him in a body bag and they got rolled off the court and that was the end of them. He's got athleticism.
Zip him up.
He's got handle. He is the prototypical. What we're seeing now, where it used to be the stretch four was just this like long skinny dude that stood over there and shot.
That you were afraid to put on the block because he wasn't strong enough. So the only thing he could do was go over there and
shoot.
This
kid can do it all, and he's I love him in this class.
It's funny because you used to have what you would have said about him to nitpick before is he's a tweener because he's more of a power player. He's a physical specimen who's really strong, rebounds, and he's not super skilled, but he's more of like a face-up guy. Well, now you see like that sort of Draymond mode where it's like, wait, this guy can defend multiple positions. He can really guard the perimeter. He's really tough. He really rebounds. He can handle a little bit. I think he's going to be excellent.
He's fantastic.
He's a five-star ranked 14th, the highest-ranked recruit in the class right now. The second-highest guy is Nick Richards, a five-star big man ranked 17th in the class by Scout.com. And he's a guy that I think fits in perfectly with what Cal does. Just
absolutely.
Because every time you get that long athletic guy who's aggressive, who isn't like still figuring things out.
Right.
They do really well in Cal's system, and that's what Nick Richards is. He's super coordinated, super aggressive, tip dunks, rebounds, block shots, all of that.
Well, I mean, he's known as a defender. He's known as a rebounder. I think he's more skilled than he gets credit for on the block.
Too. People talk about him like he's not a
They talk
a
about
scorer.
Him like he's an undeveloped, like, defense-first big man.
And he's a guy that I've seen work a guy in the post and hit a turnaround fadeaway jumper with very smoothly. So
I don't think he gets enough credit for how skilled he is offensively. He's not great offensively, but he's a lot farther along than people give him credit for so far.
I think more importantly, he's not a raw guy who's just going to be an athlete.
Not Marcus Lee.
Right. I think he has a lot of upside as a scorer going forward and could end up being a great NBA big man down the line at some point. Then Kwade Green, a guy that I watched ton of and really liked. Xavier was recruiting him heavily, thought they had a chance early on. It became clear that he was going to be an elite point guard by sort of midway through the summer. But five-star, ranked 25th in the class, and he's athletic, but he's only like 6'6", 6'1", elite passer.
Bigger than Tyler Ulis.
He's kind of in the Tyler Ulis mold.
He's very similar to Tyler Ulis. He's not quite the spark plug in terms of defensively, the freak athlete, super quick, but he's still very athletic. He can score, but he's become an elite distributor and passer. And the thing about him, Skinny, is similar to Ulis, although Ulis still ended up leaving early.
Right.
I don't know when Kwade Green ever leaves college exactly. Like he's not a guy that's a one and done by any stretch.
But I think there was a lot of people who thought that about Ulis too.
Oh, sure.
That he was probably going to be a four-year
guy. Look,
just because he was going to have to be a four-year guy.
And look, in Cal's system as a point guard, no telling. I mean, Kwade Green could put up enormous numbers and have a similar Tyler Ulis career arc, and then maybe he ends up leaving early too. But he's a guy.
Tyler Ulis has worked his way into Phoenix's rotation.
Oh, he's playing a lot.
Yeah.
But this is a guy in Kwade Green who is going to be around for at least 2 years, but I think at least probably more likely 3 or 4.
The one thing I'll give Cal credit for, as you know, I'm not a huge fan on many fronts, but granted, he can get just about anybody he wants, but there always seems to be a great mix of at least a big or two, at least a shooter or two, and a point guard in every single solitary class. It's not like saying, I'm going to take the five best guys and figure out what I'm going to do. It is.
He doesn't recruit like UConn.
You get your shot in there. That's your weekly UConn shot. Time for Chad's weekly UConn shot.
This started and it was a weekly Xavier shot, and it's turned into a weekly UConn shot. I don't know how that happened.
It's shooting fish in a barrel.
The thing about Kwade Green that I love, the kid, especially AAU, he has always played on teams with incredible levels of talent, and he's always fit in. Now, the first team he played with as a junior, he played with We Are One, which has Trayvon Duvall, who's the number one point guard in the country. And Duvall handled those point guard duties for most of that team. But Green still was an incredibly efficient, effective guy, playing off the ball most of the time and then taking over and playing on the ball
when
some
he needed to, yeah.
when he needed to. Then he went to the PSA Cardinals this year, who were bleeping loaded.
Yeah.
And I think this might be Cal's angle on why Quade Green, because he's really good friends with Mo Bamba and all those kids that played for the PSA Cardinals, and he's already talked about he's going to put in work to try to get them to Kentucky. And he was, I mean, Skinny, you talk about, he walked in from day one, it was 12 assists a game. I mean, every game. Now, granted, they were unbelievable. But that's what he's going to be playing with at Kentucky.
Right.
He's going to be playing with those type of guys.
Somebody has to be willing to give it up.
And he is willing to give it up, and he gives it up. Time, location, right spot, in position to score. The kid knows how to play.
And then this is where I think their class gets really interesting. Well, not really interesting, but it's the interesting part of their class is Shea Alexander, four-star, ranked 46th in the country. And it really is an interesting fit when you factor in that they have Quade Green, because Shea Alexander is a distributor, a guy who's known. I didn't see him as much. I don't know if you have a better feel for his game, but he's a guy known for being more of a distributor, a floor general, not necessarily like a go-to scorer. So to get kind of two point guards like that in this class, and it was kind of interesting to see that from Cal, I thought.
Well, you go back to, I mean, you go back to the Wall Bledsoe.
Yeah, but
those two are both lead guards that like to score.
Well, yeah,
these are two guys that like to distribute.
Yeah.
Cal's MO is usually get the guard who's more of a scorer, and now he's got two guys who are more distributors, which is interesting.
Alexander's an interesting one because he's 6'5", close to 6'6".
Yeah.
He's a much bigger kid. I don't know. Did you see Canada Elite in Under Armour at all?
I saw him, but didn't have enough time.
His cousin, Nikhil Alexander Walker, is committed to Virginia Tech, and they are almost identical type players. I watched. I didn't get to see Shy as a 17 and under, but I saw him a lot as a 16 and under. It's smooth. The kid really understands how to play the game. He needs to get a little bit better on his jump shot. But it's going to be interesting because you can, you know, if you play those two together, one of them is going to have to be to become a scorer a little bit or be a little bit more aggressive wanting to score. I think that's probably Quade Green.
Yeah, no question. I mean, he was known as a scorer 2 years ago and not a point guard, and now he's an elite point guard. So
it's going to be interesting to see how they play because, I mean, Cal loves having two point guards on the floor at the same time.
Yep.
Yeah, you can do a lot of things. I mean,
it's just two different types of point guards that are going to be in this class.
I mean, one point guard, one wing, and one big, and you can give me two other guys, and you can do a lot of stuff with that. I mean, you really and truly can, for goodness sakes. I do want to touch on both leagues that Xavier and UC are in real quickly, and we'll start, Chad, with the AAC.
It stinks.
It does, but there is a decent game today. SMU plays Memphis. I guess you get a chance to see what Memphis is made of a little bit. They're 4-0, but haven't played a whole lot of people.
That's football.
Yeah, no, my bad. I was looking at Memphis was playing somebody else in basketball.
Wait a minute. They're not playing a conference game right now.
Memphis was playing somebody else today. Actually, but to get a chance to see what they were made of, and I'm drawing a complete blank on who it was. But they are 4-0.
I said it from the start. You give Tubby Smith the best player in the league. Right. I don't think it's close that Dedrick Lawson is the most talented guy in this league. And you give him a solid core. You got Keelon Lawson, the younger brother that's coming on and missed most of last year, but starting to play a lot better right now. They're going to be dangerous. They might be the second best team in this league by the time it's said and done.
Memphis plays Providence. Yeah, okay, that's who it was. Yeah,
that's not a test.
Well, they're an underdog, though.
Really?
Yep.
Providence was going to be awful this year.
Two-point dog.
Okay.
Yeah, two-point dog. Yeah, but two-point dog, so at least – if you're an underdog, you're technically an underdog for a reason. So it's at least a little bit of a test for them.
I mean, it's just a power conference school they're playing against, so it's a big game.
Well, after they've played Savannah State and McNeese State and a couple
I'm
other
– throw this microphone at you.
A couple of other states. I heard you. Is there anybody in the American that does at least make you start to take notice a little bit, or is it still too early to see that?
I mean, SMU should be pretty solid. And the thing I worry about with them is they don't have a point guard at all. They're using Shake Milton there, which I'm a huge Shake Milton guy. I loved watching the kid play, but I don't think he's, you know, a full-time point guard. They're doing the whole quote-unquote positionless basketball. The interesting thing with them is I think pretty much everybody they play is 6'5 and up. They're going to be, you know, a solid team. Temple, after a kind of a bad start. Kind of surprising yesterday. They knock off.
I like him as a coach. He always
Fran.
He figures out ways. He really does.
He does. They knock off Florida State yesterday, which I was shocked by.
If they would ever get the requisite talent in place before it, like he'd be really good.
Get the old John Chaney talent.
He's always doing more with less.
Right. They lucked into it 2 years ago. They just happened to hit that right roster and they won the conference.
Yep.
I don't know. Like Houston. I can't really take them seriously until they actually prove it. I mean, their out-of-conference schedule got a little better this year. Last year, it was absolute hot garbage. At least they've got a couple games in there this year to test them. So we should, within the next 2 to 3 weeks, have a little bit better feel for Houston. I mean, I do think Kelvin Sampson's a decent coach. And then, you know, the interesting one is going to be Central Florida. Johnny Dawkins down there. They finally got a guy that can coach a little bit.
It's early, but they're 4 in the RPI. It is early.
And they've got, I mean, Taco Fall, actually.
I did that just for you, by the way.
I know.
I know how much you hate that.
Xavier was number 1 in the RPI yesterday, by the way.
Yeah, they're number 15 today.
Oh, okay.
It's quickly changed.
It's a good metric, right?
It really is.
They dropped 14 spots in one.
Without playing.
It's like when the housing bubble was just bouncing all over the place, man.
Taco Fall, and that's Rick's guy. He loves him some Taco. It's interesting.
Is that right?
Excuse me.
Hello there.
Excuse me. This is a family podcast.
Radio edit.
I thought I was going to slide that by, but you guys were too quick this morning.
Yeah.
They're an interesting team. I mean, any team that's got a 7'6" dude in the middle that can actually play.
That can move.
They're an interesting team.
It's a lot of just throwing the ball up around the rim and then making you foul him.
Yeah.
And it's not the easiest thing to defend because there's not like a set way to defend it that's right. It's just you can't be 7'6".
Still the best GIF in history.
And most of the time, 7'6" just can't move. I mean, either 7'6" is Manute Bol and weighs 205 pounds or 7'6" is 350 pounds and can't move a lick.
Have you ever seen that GIF of Taco Fall when he was in high school?
No.
We got to pull it up for you.
What he played against?
Well, this kid that's like
5'11", trying to box him out.
He's like 6'1", 350 pounds, and there's like three clips of him looking at the
he goes to put his forearm in the back of his thigh.
Yeah,
looks like, what the hell is this?
Is that technically an arm bar at that stage of the game? Can you get called for that?
Oh, it's one of the best ever.
I think it's sexual harassment.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe. Even worse.
But outside of them, and outside of those three teams, the league is not good.
Right.
UConn is dreadful, and they lost Terry Larrier for the year. And it sounds like Al-Tariq Gilbert might not be back this year either with a shoulder injury. And that's it. They are the epitome of recruiting stars. They try to get as many highly ranked kids as they can get without any real concern for how the pieces and the parts fit together.
It's not a good way to go.
And right now they fit together horribly. And the only person on that team that can score is Jalen Adams.
Yeah, I like talent, but you got to have the pieces fit together too. Such on the Big East, Rick, where I know you guys didn't think a lot of Butler, and it's obviously very early, but they are off to a 5-0 start. Are they a surprise?
They got a freshman that's pretty good.
I don't know that they're a surprise. I think everyone expected them kind of be middle of the pack of the conference. I think they
and still very much could be.
Yeah, and I think they still could be that absolutely, but I'm watching them, and like every time I watch them, I'm like, they don't necessarily impress me, but that's Butler. I mean, that's
right.
What Butler always
is. It's the Butler
is,
way.
Right?
It's the Butler way.
I mean, they're just scrappy. I mean, they really are like
coach's kids.
Yeah, I mean, they are really
scrappy.
Just every white euphemism you can think of right now. They
Shooters.
Play hard. They rebound. They make it ugly, but they find a way to win, and they do have some young talent that has been coming through for them. Kamar Baldwin is pretty impressive, a 6-foot freshman guard. So, I'm intrigued by what I've seen from Butler so far.
Usually when you look at a league at this time of year, you start to look bottom and go up. Obviously, Georgetown's at the bottom. One of you guys went on a rant about them, rightfully so, and John Thompson III the last time. I think we did a couple times ago to the podcast. St. John's is down towards the bottom, but they've even played a little bit better. Now, I'm not here to tell you that they do. Can they win more than one game that they won last year in the league? Probably, but maybe not more than that. But they seem to be better. So when you start to look at the bottom portion of the league, it's not awful.
No, it's not. I mean, DePaul and Providence are probably the worst two teams, and right now it doesn't necessarily, like, the records don't necessarily reflect
right.
that. I think St. John's, you know, they've lost three games in a row, but it's all the teams in the top
Correct.
60, two of them
and,
top
and,
30 type teams.
And played VCU very, very tough, what, lost by six,
yeah.
I think?
And they played Michigan State tough, and
right.
then lost by
right.
nine or whatever
right.
it ended up being, or 11, I think, but and then lost to Minnesota in a close game as well. So St. John's, to me, is a team that could end up finishing middle of the pack in the Big East by the time we get to conference play. They they have a lot of talent.
And that's where when you start to look, you start to look top to bottom, go, all right, well, that team's not good. But when you say that a team like St. John's can go middle of the pack, that means when you go play them at their place, it becomes an extraordinarily tougher game than what you would hope it was going to be.
I don't think there's an easy win. I mean, I think DePaul and Providence are two teams that Xavier should handle this year. But outside of that, I don't think there's another easy win on the road or at home. And then, in addition, you have at the top of the conference right now, you have Villanova, Xavier, and Creighton, which are all three teams that legitimately look like top 10 teams in the country to me. And then, like we talked about, Butler right outside of that. Seton Hall's been playing pretty well. So, I mean, you have three legit top 10 teams that I just mentioned. You have Butler, who's playing really well. It's a top 25 team legitimately. And then Seton Hall's somewhere just outside of that, I think.
All right, kind of a quick one
Creighton's
today.
Creighton's really good.
Really good. The only concern you have with Creighton is Zach Hansen just got injured. He's out for the year now. So they're a little thin inside. Justin Patton's a freshman, 7-footer. He's been starting. He's been playing really, really well. But you're all of a sudden a lot thinner than you were when you lose one of your main big men in the rotation.
Before I was going to let you guys take a final take on some stuff, but the other importance of what this time of year is for leagues is what you do outside of the league. Obviously, once you get inside, you're just playing each other, and so the RPI doesn't change a whole. The metric doesn't start to change. This time of year where the leagues can really make some hay and set the stage for everybody else in the league.
Yeah, it's hugely important in terms of fixing that RPI metric.
At a certain number, yeah.
Yeah, this is why you can game the RPI, and for a conference, this is how you do it. You win a few big games outside of it. You don't take bad losses.
Yeah.
All right. Any final take from you, Chad Brendel?
Yeah, I think we haven't touched on this team much at all this year, which, surprising considering they're right down the road. But a guy that Rick and I absolutely loved is starting to become the closer for the Louisville Cardinals in Donovan Mitchell. And he really is coming on. And he's a kid. I love the fact that the kid plays with so much confidence. I think he was 0-for-6 the other day from three and then hit two down the stretch in the final minute and a half of the game. He is becoming, as we suspected, very much their go-to guy, their money-in-the-bank guy. I love seeing his development. And just a kid, even when you talk to him, Rick, you remember this, always had a smile, always a kid that was engaging and in a great mood and had a great outlook on things.
I want to touch on that because I was listening Louisville played the opener like everybody else on that Friday the 11th, and my daughter was cheering for a high school game, so I'm in the parking lot listening to some pregame shows, and they were talking about Donovan Mitchell, and Rick Pitino was talking about how important he was just as a kid class and what he has meant just as a kid in that program, let alone what he thought he was going to be as a player. And he spoke extremely highly of where he thought his game was going to go, so it's interesting you bring that up because it's exactly what he talked about right before their season opened.
He can vouch for this. The first time we saw him play, we were up in Pittsburgh. He was in a side gym. He was on a bad team. We watched him. We absolutely loved him. When the game got over, we went to interview him, and both of us walked away from that interview going, holy cow.
Yeah, he's a full package.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was so – it was funny because we'd been sent – it was before he had blown up. Everyone knew he was going to Brewster Academy, which is a big-time prep school in New England. But like Chad said, he played on a smaller AAU program that wasn't as well-known. But all of a sudden, the buzz started happening. Coaches go, hey, go check this guy out. What do you think of that guy? And we go check him out. We go – it's like they go, is he good enough? And I go, he's too
better.
Good.
Yeah,
you ain't gonna get him.
Well, and the best. Go ahead.
Yeah, and then like Chad said, then we talked to him, and it's like, holy crap, he played that well, and he seems like just a really smart, engaging, great kid.
Yeah, great smile. Like I said, great smile. Like was thrilled to have media there talking to him. Like wasn't entitled by it, and he was kind of under the radar all the way up through that. To the start of July, we go to the first tournament in July, and at his first game. Crean, Pitino. No, it didn't start. It was instant. All of a sudden, bam, the word had gotten around in June, hey, this is a kid that you have to go see because he's exploding. And the rest of that July, he dominated.
And we're going to find out a lot more about this Louisville team. Yeah.
Today.
They just beat Wichita State. It was a nice win.
Yeah, by the time people may listen to this game may already be over, but they do play Baylor today on a neutral. So,
yeah, and then they return home to play Purdue after that's all said and done with. So it's a big week for them coming up.
No doubt about it.
Love me some Donovan Mitchell.
How about you, Rick? Any final take?
Yeah. Can we hit on this situation at Morehead State?
Yes, we can, actually.
Sean Woods suspended indefinitely with pay. That happened on Tuesday, and players have petitioned the NCAA with arguments of mistreatment and a hostile environment. And
this has been, for those who know, this has been going on for a while.
And they're using that as a reason that they should be able to transfer without having to sit out a year. And I'll say this, like, the rumors I've heard coming from there.
Are we going to talk about the rumor?
No, I don't think we should. I think it'd be irresponsible just because we don't know. But it deals with this type of stuff. We're talking about player abuse.
If the rumor is true. He's done.
Oh, no question.
He's done forever.
But either way, regardless, this is going to get really ugly. I mean, if it's to the point where, one, we already know he's been suspended in the past for abusing a kid during the UK game a year or two ago.
Yep.
2 years ago, I think. So we already know this is that type of stuff. The rumors coming out are even uglier.
This isn't Mike Rice throwing basketballs at people.
No, we're going to hear some really ugly things from this if it shakes down the way I think it will.
Look, coaching is a hard deal, man, and I am.
It ain't that hard.
I'm not condoning anything of what he's done, and I can be over the top as much as anybody at times. But there is a point of over the top to make a point where you might throw a basketball against a wall, you might kick one to the ceiling, you might yell at a kid in a certain way. But then there is way over the top, and that's where. Today's day and age, I'm just not sure how you think you can get away with that stuff. I just, because kids aren't going to put up with it. I mean, they'll put.
That's the thing.
I think kids will put up with, and I could be wrong. Maybe I read the situation wrong as a coach myself. I think kids will put up with accountability as long as you're fair on the other side of it. If you're fair on the other side of it, and you hold them accountable, and you hold all of them accountable,
agree.
I think they're in 100%. But when it takes it above that stage, I don't see how anybody condones it and how anybody thinks they can get away with it.
And I don't know what all the other stuff that's going on in practices or anything, what exactly the dynamic is there, but it drives me crazy. He's that type of coach that during the game, when you screw up or his team is playing bad, he gets too competitive and loses his head. I mean, like, he loses his mind right there in front of everybody on television when you're playing Kentucky, which is the biggest stage you'll play on all year is Morehead State.
The Big Blue.
You're going to lose your mind like that on the sideline in front of a player.
Almost got me.
And push the kid. I mean, he pushed that kid 2 years ago when he got suspended the first time. So it's not a good situation. But this is, and I'm not blaming this on the fans, and I'm not saying this is even the same situation. But this is one of those things where I hate the perspective of the fans where they feel like coaches need to coach hard during the games. Like, I've heard this before. I'm sure Mick probably doesn't have this issue because he's always coaching hard.
I think you just have to be true to your personality.
No, actually, since he's come back from the brain stuff, he's mellowed out a lot. People complain that he's not coaching hard enough anymore.
Finish your point. I'm going to make one back.
Like a few years ago when Xavier wasn't necessarily struggling, but Chris Mack wasn't winning the way Xavier fans wanted to win, I remember talking like, Chris is too – he sits down on the bench too much and doesn't get up there and scream and do this. And it's like, look, you coach your team during the week at practice. And in timeouts and during halftime when you make adjustments, it's not the time to act like a clown over there on the sideline. Wojo jumping around and playing defense on the sideline and pounding the floor and stuff as a coach does nothing for me. I don't need to see any of that.
And Mick talked about this.
It does something for his kids. Now, I'm not telling you it does.
But it doesn't.
It probably doesn't.
Over there acting like a clown.
Mick talked about this the other day, that at some point you can't yell at them all the time. Like, you can't.
It loses its effectiveness.
Yeah, you have to, like, you can tell there's days where he's going to, like, be a crazy man in practice because he walks in with that mind. Like, it's predetermined. It's scripted, if you will.
And all you're looking for is the one hot button to get you. A kid
and then you
block
blow
out,
up
a kid
and
doesn't
yeah.
hustle. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Then you blow up and you make your point and then you back off. And the next day he comes into practice, he's in a great mood. Like, that stuff isn't, you can't act like that all the time. And your kids, 19, 20, 21, 22 years old, just turn you off.
They
shut you down. You're out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, I'm not condoning at all what Sean Woods did. Trust me. And we've seen it in the past. And if it's so far over the top, then you're right. He's not going to coach again.
If it's what I heard, there's no way he'll ever coach again.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking physical abuse type stuff at this point.
But again, I just don't know how you think you can get away. How do you think you can get away with that?
It's ridiculous to me that it ever even gets to that point.
Why are you
believe that ridiculous? You know, even yelling at the kids like that to me is just, it does nothing for anyone. We're not impressed by you.
I'll tell you, again, I still think you have to be true to yourself, though. I think you have to, if you're
But you wound, can't be a lunatic.
Not a lunatic.
Bob Huggins players love Bob Huggins.
Correct.
And that dude's as crazy
because,
as you would ever need to be on a sideline and as mad as you'd ever need to be at your players.
There is an accountability factor, and then there's I have your back factor.
And there's a genuine I care about you, and I'm going to show you that in many other ways, and I can still I take it really, really far without ever crossing the line of respect or anything like that.
Yeah, I agree with that part. And again, physical abuse is never.
That's just absurd.
That's way too much. All right, Chad, what do you got on the website at BearcatJournal.com?
Got some good stuff from our newest writer at BearcatJournal.com.
Cass
is doing some really good stuff for us. Justin Berg, coming in every game with a pregame breakdown of each team. He's doing a fantastic job on those. I think his scouting reports have been phenomenal. And then I'll follow up after post game and give you a little Brendel's Bites action. And thankfully, last night is the last football game that I have to cover for the season.
Yeah, but then you'll have a coaching search coming up. Good luck with that. That's even worse.
I don't mind that. Okay. I don't mind right. that.
Well, it does create traffic. There's no doubt about
Very
that.
Much so.
And you'll be on top of it. I know that for sure.
There Correct.
How about you, Rick Roaring, on your site?
Yeah, so obviously a slow week with no games going on.
It's holiday week, man.
Yeah,
it's good.
We've still been recapping, you know, the whole win at the Tire Pros Invitational. And then we've got the matchups will be up Saturday morning, tomorrow morning, if you're listening to this on Friday, the day it was recorded.
Late tonight.
Xavier, Northern Iowa. You know, it'll be morning. I promise you that. And that's about it. So, post-game stuff from that. And Najee Marshall just played really well. Well, last week, one of Xavier's 2017 recruits, Evan Daniels, had an interview with him this past week. So some good stuff on there. Check
good
it
stuff,
out.
Fellas. Appreciate the time. As always, we will be back on Monday as I come back from the beautiful town of Baltimore, and we'll talk some more basketball, recap the weekend, and look ahead to the midweek. And then, of course, next Friday we're back again as well. Each Monday and Friday, you can catch this podcast at local12.com and other places. Thanks to Chad Brendel. Thanks to Rick Roaring. We will talk to you again on Monday. Have a great weekend.